If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.
The Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
It's our favorite time. We're on the air.
Yay.
Yay.
I hope that didn't sound as like pathetic as it felt.
Well, even if it did, by the time we get through with all the musings that we're going to go on and what magic is, it'll probably be fine. You'll get hyped on it. I know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll get my second win.
You were telling me at the beginning of the before as our check-in on our own side, the kind of day you've been having. And I thought I'd let you kind of share that because I personally think it's a Mercury retrograde and nobody told us.
Well, it's just I'm going into the busiest time of year, a retail shop owner. And so, the last couple of weeks have been spent ordering lots of stock that I might not normally order. And, both in quantity and in items. And today, the last couple of days, it dawned on me, like, oh, I have a lot of things coming in, and I don't have enough places to put all of the things. So
that
I got some, absolutely. So I got some new furniture and a cute little display rack. And I, one of my favorite things is thinking out and organizing and making little displays. And it's like creating altars all over the shop. I really enjoy it. So, I was looking forward to it, but I got up much earlier today than I normally do and got going much faster than I normally get going. And what I thought was going to be a 2 to 3 hour project turned into a 5 to 6 hour project. And so it just threw my whole day off. And so now I'm sort of behind and I think actually I'm caught up, but brain hasn't caught up with the fact that I'm caught up. But so thankfully tomorrow I have the day off and I don't have any commitments except for a celebration of someone's birthday tomorrow night. So I feel like, okay, I have a day off and it's my only day off, until Thanksgiving. So, I plan to take advantage of it.
I think you should. I really do. I think you should.
Me
because
too.
It's definitely, and Thanksgiving, depending on what you're doing, what kind of family involvements you have is never really all that relaxing in many ways, depending on if you're the one hosting or hostessing the location or, whatever. And there's always a lot of stuff going on. But, Yeah, mine is going to be real quiet. Thanksgiving's going to be just like totally bland because all of my family's back out of the area. Some of them that are here are going out of the area to other parts of their family. My own biological family is, you know, not going to be available until I see them at Christmas time. So a very dear family friend of mine and I are going to go to our, it's a wonderful little restaurant and have a turkey dinner and then come back here and, you know, just hang out. And I thought, that's really kind of, you know, cool. I mean, I'm used to a lot of family. I mean, you know, Italian, you have tons of family and God knows how much drama and all the stuff that goes with it. And it's been very quiet. And I'm like, wow, this is weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, and I, you know, when my husband was alive, we would be the ones that hosted the holidays. We'd host Christmas, we'd host New Year's, we'd host, you know, Thanksgiving. So it's kind of like, I'm like, is this what retirement's really like?
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. But
yeah, we're not hosting this year, so it is a day off, thankfully.
Oh, there you go. Excellent. Yeah. My week has just been so strange, and as I said, I keep thinking it's a Mercury retrograde because there's so many glitches with things that you would associate with a Mercury retrograde that I'm like going, really? It isn't? You know, yoga classes getting canceled and skewed times, you know, things that you think you're going to do and you don't do, and people misplace, you know, the focus of what we're doing and blah, blah, blah. So,
yeah.
So the weekend is upon us, and going to find a hole and hide in it. Oh, I'm going to be doing the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Root Work Hour on Sunday. They went out of their way to try and get a hold of me for, obviously somebody isn't going to do it, but I said yes, so that's going to be kind of interesting. And then going to see Kitaro, which is a musician that is very well known within the New Age circles. He's very, you know, I got introduced in the 80s and 90s to him and just absolutely loved him. And a friend of mine, family friend, is taking me to that on Sunday evening for it's my birthday gift, but since my birthday is in Christmas time area and he's going to be here, we decided this was my birthday gift. So
nice.
I will be able to share that the next time we get together.
So what is your topic for the radio show on Sunday? What are you going to be talking about?
Gratitude.
Lovely.
Yes. Well, I figured, you know, in light of everything that's gone on, and of course, you know, there's always a free spell, and I have to come up with something rather poignant about that. But I really thought that it was time we looked at the gratitude that we have for all that we've, you know, all that's happened, out of what has happened. What is it that we could pull gratitude from? And I know it's, you know, how do I want to put this? It's more like a Zen, you know, there's Zen and Buddhism and, you know, all that consciousness. But it is part of every religion and every culture and every belief system of, you know, gratitude of, you know, what you have and what you walk around with. So I thought, well, that seemed about right. And Thanksgiving's around the corner. So I, you know, it was like, that seems about it. So we'll see how that comes about.
Well, that ought to be fun.
Yeah, it should be. We'll see. I'm kind of like going, okay, so I'm going to do that, run out the door, meet my friend, and then she's going to take me. And I hope this all works out well.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
So as long as we don't have rain, I'm fine because, you know, when you're trying to get someplace reasonably fast, even in the dark when it's raining, it's icky, but, you know. So here we are. What is our topic for this wonderful event that we are having tonight? Is this called Magic?
Magic, our very vague topic, magic.
I know, I like it. I like it. Gives us a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
So, how do we want to approach this? Want to just start as, what is magic?
What is magic?
Yeah.
What is it, Elvira? Tell us.
Gee, well, you know, there is the dictionary definition, and we're talking the paranormal. We're not talking about magical, you know, illusionary magic, but they basically, it goes as this. It says magic or sorcery is the use of ritual, symbols, actions, gesture, and language with the aim of utilizing supernatural forces.
Mm-hmm.
So we can go from there. That's pretty vague, pretty open, and we can go from that. So, you know, and I think that people who have practiced magic have referred to themselves as magicians, you know. So how do we look at this? You know, it's, we have a definition of a general definition, and we will kind of drill down with that maybe. But I liked what you were basically, we were talking about of, you know, the different ways of spelling magic.
Right.
So
yeah, well,
why don't you throw that one out?
Sure. What I was taught, and I don't remember where this originated from or who taught me this, so apologies, teacher, whoever you are. I was taught that magic, M-A-G-I-C, referred to stage magic, sleight of hand, tricks, card tricks, you know, David Copperfield magic. And that magic, M-A-G-I-C-K, is ritual magic, craft. That kind of thing. What, you know, more of what we're going to talk about tonight. And then sometimes you may see magic spelled with a J instead of G. And I was told that that was just being extra fancy. And that there really is no legitimate reason to do it that way other than people trying to even further pull Wicca, witchcraft, magical processes away from what might be considered sleight of hand. So that. I used to be a stickler for the K. I felt like you had to spell magic with a K when you were talking about witchcraft. Otherwise, you know, that's how you differentiate it. And I've noticed in the last year, especially with my blog, I've gotten kind of lax about it, and I'm not so much a stickler as I once was. So I don't know what that's about. It could just be laziness. But I think, you know, the things that I, especially when I was a young baby witch and the things felt so radical and it was a way to be like, yeah, you know, fighting the mainstream. And now I'm just not, I don't care so much about fighting the mainstream. I care more about what I'm doing and what my beloveds are doing and that kind of thing, you know?
I mean, it's maturity, and I don't mean that in a demeaning way. I mean, it's maturity of our craft, of becoming more mature in our craft rather than, you know, the other things. It doesn't mean that we don't get hot under the collar about certain things, but I think we're looking at it from, like down the road, like, yeah, I was really in arms about this, and I'm really, you know, and then suddenly it's like, well, I want to be more true to the work I'm doing rather than this other side.
Yeah. Although I got to say, now that we're talking about it, I feel myself again becoming attached to the K. I'm having a very Libran day. My moon sign is in Libra. So my partner, Guian, and I were driving home earlier today, and I was having this conversation with him, like hashing out this concept. And I start to argue one side of the concept. And then as I'm arguing the one side, I am totally understanding the other side. And I start to argue the other side of the concept. I'm having a very Libran day.
Well, I can understand that. I mean, truthfully, my moon is in Gemini. So I am kind of that.
Oh, there we go.
Either side. Yes. But I also have a lot of my other planets in the sign of Libra. So that's kind of, you know, they throw those things in there. But so if I argue passionately, then I also go to the other side. But I have to stay, I usually start with like one area I'm really into. And then suddenly, just like you, I start to see the other side. And I go, well, yeah, but there's also merit in part of this. And, you know,
right.
So.
Yep.
The problems of buying into the balance of scales, you know. Well.
Right.
So, but yeah. So, you know, and I know that there are all kinds of ways to look at magic, and you know, the magic with a K, the more spell spiritual kind of process, you know. It, but most people, you know, like our clients or people that start, you know, working with the different aspects of magic, it's because we're looking to try and get into the science of the control of the secret forces, so to speak, of nature. You know, we're trying to learn how to control our environment.
Right. Right. And that is one of the descriptions of magic by Doreen Virtue. I think now it's, yeah, brain is not functioning today. I apologize.
It's Doreen Virtue.
Thank you. Yeah, the art of changing consciousness at will.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, magic is the science of art of causing a change to occur in conformity with will. That's Aleister Crowley's definition.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Our wonderful Aleister Crowley. See?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and Derek Gardner said that magic is the art of changing. No. That was Crowley. Gardner said, attempting to cause the physically unusual.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's a good one. and it's kind of like, okay, everybody, you know, it's like, how do I say this thing in my way, and you know, and put the spin on it for my way, and you know, okay, that's the whole point. One of the things that I have found a lot of in terms of how I try to describe magic to clients, because usually they're in need, they want something, and so I explain to them it's desire made real. How you do the desire made real is, you know, the structure of it, how you structure getting what you're looking for, what you're trying to get, and what you're putting out there. But I also think that we also have to realize that sometimes there's a bigger thing going on than our will and wanting to do it our way, you know, like hitting a brick wall a lot when you're not getting something. So,
absolutely. And I want to make a correction. I said Doreen Virtue. It's Dion Fortune who said
Dion
the art
Fortune.
Of changing consciousness. Well, yeah. Just wanted to get correctly quote Dion Fortune.
True. If we're going to give people, you know, credit, we need to do it appropriately.
Yes. Yes.
And of course, it's been around forever. You know, when I say forever, as long as humankind has been out there, magic in the magical principles, and even without the principles, the concept of magic with a K has been around. I mean, humans have been out there.
What I found really interesting in some of the research, I was doing my own ideas of magic. I practice magic, blah, blah, blah. But I did a lot of research on this topic, and there is this breakdown between magic and science, and and different philosophers and different researchers and different scientists break these concepts down differently. And religion. So we have science, we have religion, and we have magic. And different people believe those things intersect or do not intersect or flow together or do not flow together differently. And I've always sort of felt that science and magic were the same. And it's that science, you know, magic is the thing that we just know in our beings. It's the life force, it's the energy, it's the way we connect to the universe. And science is catching up and being able to explain those concepts that magic makes poetry and myth about, and then science catches up and says, "Oh, but this is why it's like concepts that magical practitioners have known for hundreds of years, and only recently has science given it a logical explanation or started to do studies or what have you on these concepts." So I feel like, you know, I think there's a bit of, from the science perspective, there's a little bit of looking down one's nose at magic and having feelings that, you know, magic is superstition and religion is just organized superstition, and that science is real. And I find that really irritating, because there's so much overlap between science and magic.
Of course there is. Of course there is. And, you know, if you're looking, I have always looked at science as it's magic. It's just taking it and moving it through a different lens to get it to, because people are talking in ways that magicians, the people that practice this magic of working with the elements and the different aspects of divinity, et cetera, as they take it from a knowingness, and science is about proving.
Right. Right.
So it kind of goes, well, then we've proved, just like they proved,
right,
that when a body dies, it loses weight instantaneously.
Right.
So, mm-hmm, you know, there's a soul that has left that one,
right,
area. And, you know, so in a strange way, it's taking the intellectual side and,
mm-hmm,
saying, yeah, well, now we can prove that this is what it is.
Right.
So,
right. Right.
Yeah.
And I think some of that disassociation between magic and science, and especially from the science end, I don't think very many magical practitioners are like, science, that's ridiculous, you know, but I think from the other way, it's magic and think it's a bunch of hogwash. And I, again, in my research, what has come to sort of hit me is this is due to our enculturation, because the Romans and magic illegal,
mm-hmm,
not doing spells, not doing witchcraft, not doing religion, not doing ritual, none of those things. But they called magic, very specifically, was when people were being charlatans. Magic was when people were taking your money and saying they were going to do spell work for you, or they were taking your money and saying that they were doing something on your behalf, and they weren't. They were just taking,
right,
your money. It wasn't,
right,
illegal to do spells. It wasn't ritual. It wasn't illegal to do what we might even consider magic now in 2017, but back,
mm-hmm,
then that was the way they were able to take out the scammers. And so I think that concept of magic being a scam art is kind of in our collective consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, see, and now I like that concept. You know, maybe my Italian Roman background suddenly kicks in on genetics or something, I don't know. But the idea that you can find a way to weed out the scammers, just like we have scammers on, you know,
mm-hmm,
Medicare plan, you know, people that call and or the IRS scamming, people doing scams about that and getting money.
Yeah.
This has, I mean, they're all illusionary. So if,
right,
you're looking at magic with a C as illusionary sleight of hand, it is a sleight of hand in one way, not necessarily,
yeah,
as we would say, taking a card and making it disappear routine, but it's that same aspect. So I do like that. That kind of makes me warm and fuzzy inside.
Yeah.
But we have, and then we have, you know, there's like, okay, what are some of the common features of magic with a K practice? I mean, what,
mm-hmm,
what makes up doing magic? So,
mm-hmm,
do you want to name some, or you want me to, you know, we can,
yeah,
start out
you,
with like,
you start.
I get to start. Yay. Okay. So it's like rituals, you know, we,
right,
do magical rituals, which are, as we've talked about in the past and more, is that, you know, actions that consist of gestures and performed with special objects at particular times and locations.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we are creating a environment where we can connect with these energies to, again, create some kind of desired change.
Right.
And it's, I think, in its, when I think of magic, the first thing I do think of is ritual. You know, that's
yeah,
kind of like, oh, that's magic, you know. But, and then you have different things that you use. For instance, as we've talked about, tools, and then we have magical symbols.
Mm-hmm.
And we have magical languages. So, you know,
mm-hmm,
ways of writing things, of speaking things. You know, there are certain principles. And it's basically sympathetic magic, you know, like,
right,
trying to get the similarity to be able to bring what we want, like, okay, if, you know, we'll talk of something very that we have dealt with a lot. People that want something that they want something to happen with a relationship. So you either do a figural candle, you do candles as representations of the individuals, you do a poppet, and, you know,
mm-hmm,
create that energy where you're working that, you know, symbiotic process. Like, you are this,
right,
and I am creating the change.
Right. Sympathetic magic, too, is one of the oldest recorded forms of magic, and our ancient ancestors would do sympathetic magic, for example, before the tribe would go out to hunt, and the magician, the shaman, the magical person of the tribe would dress as the hunted creature, the deer or the buffalo or whatever it was they were hunting, and they would do a ritual and they would enact what they wanted to happen on the hunt. And they would symbolically kill the animal, and they would do this ritual, this spell, this magical piece to create the right atmosphere. So when they went out for the hunt, they killed the animal they wanted to kill, and that all of the hunters were safe. So this is something that's found in cave drawings. It's written about extensively. Sympathetic magic, that is what it is. It's, we're going to do this thing. We're going to enact. And so the outcome of the actual situation goes exactly how I want it to. And that's like, I'm going to burn this candle, and this candle is going to have impact on this situation so that the outcome is what I want it to be.
Right, right.
Yep.
And a lot of the, and I think that, you know, when you're making spell bags or mojo bags, you know, you're making things to create that kind of process. You're trying to work with that pulling that energy into to work with you and to create a desired outcome. So and you know, we've discussed a lot of things in separate recordings. We've done, you know, certain items, you know, and we've used them and discussed them, like, you know, the cauldron and the athame and the sword and the, you know, the wand and things like that. But when you start looking at, this is what's behind the use of all of those things.
Yeah.
Magic is what's behind it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. There's a French sociologist in some of the reading I was doing, Marcel Mauss, and he posited that magic was actually the opposite of religion, where before a lot of these sociologists and anthropologists and thinkers were, magic came first. That's like the most crude form of what we do as humans. Religion, and then science came third. And that's the evolution of us as thinking spiritual beings. It's kind of sad to think about it that way. Where Mauss looked at it and said magic is actually the opposite of religion, and that religion is public and it is organized and it is, and you know, it's a cult, basically, where magic is something that is personal and secret and mysterious, and you do it either by yourself or with a small group of people, and it feels forbidden. Therefore, that's where the power comes in, because it is this secret, quiet thing that's not social. It's not, you're not going on Sunday in your best dress and saying hello to all of the people in your neighborhood. That's religion. Magic is something a little bit more where you're actually getting your hands dirty. That's the differentiation. And I kind of like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it definitely makes, I mean, you think about what we do as, you know, witches, and, you know, what is done in different cultures of, you know, shamans and medicine people, and, you know, the curanderas and curanderos, and you're dealing with using this energy in a secret way, in a way that is not out there in the middle of everybody. I mean, when we do public rituals, then we're actually crossing over in the definition of that, and I actually see that as we create it, and yes, it becomes a larger experience, but then what we're doing is we're getting everybody's energy in it to experience all of that energy in a bigger way. So it's not as private, really.
Right, right. And you can see, you know, from these thinkers in the 1500s and 1600s and 1700s, and this continues to develop, where we have all of these occultists, is probably what we would call them now, doing things, natural magic or magia naturalis, and testing all of these theories. And there's a little bit of working with demons and trying to summon energies that and life forces that we don't necessarily look at on our day-to-day lives. And what this did, what it literally, you can see, the more you study it, the more it became like, oh, I'm going to test this random theory. I'm going to try and invoke this demon. I'm going to try and create gold using alchemy. And these people who were into it slowly started, they became scientists, because then they were like, oh, well, if you do this and this and this, you, this is your outcome. Where people in this same sort of age of enlightenment, you know, we have like Blavatsky, who was doing all these very same tests, but she believed that there was magic in it. She wasn't completely divorcing the idea of understandable concepts and understandable concepts, and that they interact with each other.
Right. And of course, as we know, you get, and I love this, it's kind of like new thought.
Yeah.
And then we go into the new age, and then we go into the enlightenment, you know, the love, you know, the enlightened group. And what you're noticing is as people, they move forward and they find different things that are part of the same thing, science and magic, the spiritual realm, the realm that is unseen and what we can do, and add. And it becomes, and then again, you know, you're talking about things becoming more available, just like we've been talking about the different traditions, is that, you know, you start seeing people going from, like, the Rosicrucians or the Masons or any of the ones that were doing things as you're invited and tested and brought in, or, you know, a special, more secretive coven or things like that, to more open, like, get online and do this, and, you know, we'll have this online chat, and, you know, we're talking about magic online and, you know, spiritual summoning of whatever.
Right.
It's become much more out there, just like we've become out of the broom closet, so to speak. So.
Yeah. And you said something that made me chuckle, because the new age, the neo, and like how it's not new, it's just, it's old, but it's kind of being resurfaced with the new name, you know, funny to me.
Yeah. Well, and that's true even when you're talking new thought. I mean,
absolutely.
You think about the new thought and, you know, affirmations and positive thinking. And, you know, here I am. For a long time, I belonged to the Church of Religious Science. And, you know, again, Church of Religious Science, spirituality is, there is a, you know, a formula, and you can, which is scientific, and you can do this and it will do that and it will bring this kind of process, is just a more sciencey kind of way of dealing with magic.
Right. Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So, I was kind of, and, you know, I have not done Rosicrucian, but my husband had done Rosicrucian, and so it was kind of funny when he would actually talk to me, because, you know, it wasn't like he was that secretive about a lot of stuff, but it was like, oh, well, that's like this over here in witchcraft.
Yeah.
And he's like, what?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So it is. It has its ways all over the place. But,
oh, yeah. My mom is in the religious science church, and she would tell me some of the things she was learning when she was going through practitioner training. And I was like, you're doing a spell. What you're telling me right now is a very cool spell. And she was like, no.
Uh-huh.
Yep, that's exactly what it is. Yep.
I know. It was, I never went to, well, the problem with, I wanted to do practitionership, but the particular church that I was going to, the particular reverend, made it very clear when I went in for my interview to go from, you know, the lower class teachings, you can then go in and you have to have this interview. And he was very adamant that I had to give up all things outside of the precepts of the practitionership and Church of Religious Science belief systems. And I looked at them, and I very calmly said, I'm sorry, I will be a priestess of the goddess forever and ever, so I guess I'm not going to be doing this.
And how interesting, because I thought they were non-denominational, so that's very,
so
very
I.
interesting.
And this happened,
yeah.
And I was very disturbed by it. And I found out later that this particular reverend was very structured in that way. And the weird part was that he actually, when he was getting his training, he was in Southern California, and he knew my brother, who was also going through practitionership down there. And
how
I'm like,
funny.
How small, because he looked at my name, and Kirkaruto was what I was going by at the time, and he just said, are you any relationship to so-and-so? And I said, yeah, he's my brother.
Yeah.
You know. But,
nice.
Yeah, so, It was, you know, it just means that we're a small world no matter where we go.
That's
but,
true,
so,
absolutely.
You know, so we can use magical language, we can use magical symbols, you know, and I think that those are, I mean, quite frankly, I always love, like, the rune alphabet or the,
oh,
the
yeah.
magical alphabet of the Strega or, you know, I
yeah,
was really always into that. It was like, oh, yeah, that's, I think it also means that it's secretive in its own right. I mean, you got to know it. I mean, yeah, you can look at a book and get it, but it's different. It's like the big time when you first started to learn to do your alphabet in the English language. It's like, wow,
right.
This is so great.
But,
nice. You know, I'm a kid at heart. It was like, gee, can I do that? You know, when I was in Sicily, I was at the Mediterranean, obviously, because we were in this one little, well, it wasn't little, but hotel area. And because it was off season, unfortunately, because they have a certain season, and we were in at September, which meant they were closing it down, literally, by the time we were finished. And so I was out. For some reason, I needed to get out and go walk down the beach. And I started drawing. I took a stick, and I started drawing, like, symbols, and they weren't necessarily symbols of a language I knew. I just started doing it, and it was fascinating because I was going through the feeling of what was going on, because there was some turmoil that had been going on within the people that I was on vacation with, and so I was trying to sort of let go of all of that, and I went out there, and it was weird. It was very magical because I kept writing and doing these lines and circles and all kinds of stuff, and then the water would come up, and it would take it away, and it was weird. It was nothing I could go, okay, I have this book and it says this is what the symbology is of these lines and circles and things. But so I believe that we don't always have to know the actual proven symbols and you know, languages, alphabetical or magical languages. I think it comes
mm-hmm.
from within us.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but... So that's magic, too. Go to the beach and do things on the beach. They're like right
do
on.
Random things. Nice.
Random. Well, as long as they're reasonable, like, you know, randomly take your clothes off. No, I don't think so. Mm-mm.
Well, it depends
Not
on the
in
beach.
The public area. That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Because you get that.
Well, should
so.
We take a break and then come back and discuss more about magic?
Sounds like a plan, my dear. Go for it.
All right.
We'll go.
Be right we'll be back.
Okay.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie, Sundays 3 to 4:30. The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6. Fit and Foxy with Madame Nadia and Jaya Dania, Wednesdays 6 to 7. The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30. And The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Fridays 6 to 7. All times Pacific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Oh, that's so quick. Huh. I don't know. Well, you know how things are. I love the fact that we're the last ones. Kind of like
save the best for last.
Of course, we're so nice. So, one of the things I thought we might go into is, you know, I love this, and I think you and I, as I say, we kind of wandered through it at the beginning before we started the show. Is the like the right hand path, the left hand path?
Yeah,
that's something that we hear a lot about, or is discussed, or whispered about. So. What is your definition of the right and the left-hand path?
Yeah, so how I have been taught, the right-hand path is a specific kind of magic. It's the blessing kind, the healing magic, the what we might consider white light magic, the helping magic, the growing and bringing forth, right? Where the left path is the cursing work, the banishing work, the turning away, and those two sides, they're two sides of one coin. So in order to know how to do healing magic, you also know how to do harming magic. In order to know how to someone, you need to know how to curse someone, because they are two sides of the same coin. And to understand the concepts of that magic, to understand the what that magic works, you have to understand its opposite. So that's how I was told about the right and left hand path. But you had a little bit of a different description that I found really interesting.
Yeah, and it's good because, I mean, truthfully, that's what I learned it as, you know, and then, you know, kind of things. But when I started doing research and, you know, again, books and, you know, I do the old-fashioned first. I actually go to my books and I look at those. And the fact that I actually have hardcover books, you know, that's a big thing. But they talk about the right-hand path is becoming one with the divine, dissolving the ego. So if you think about the white light path, the white path of the blessing, is if you take away your ego, then you're working in a co-creative process with the divine, however you have, is it a goddess, a god, Yahweh, whatever, in terms of that. And I could see where those two could, you know, two areas could fit in terms of definition. And the left-hand path is turning oneself into a deity and achieving apotheosis, so becoming the deity. So if you're cursing or you're banishing, you're creating a turning away, and you're becoming the deity itself, the energy itself to do what you're doing. So
right.
I can see, you know, because, again, dark and light, and, you know, we don't consider dark negative. It's just the opposite of light. But then if you're doing things that are harmful, mm-hmm. then I would look at it as you become deity. You are dealing out the justice according to how you see it. Now, you know, obviously that may mean that people that have done horrid things need, you know, cause and effect kind of a situation. So
right.
I kind of go, you curse somebody because you didn't get what you wanted because they got in the way is petty. Going
right.
after someone who has harmed children or harmed women or harmed animals or harmed, you know, other human adult male and females
mm-hmm.
In the format, that in itself is, I would use that as a, you know, a guiding light, because then being a deity, so to speak, you are the justice of the process.
Mm. Right.
But that's how I kind of have, how this kind of got more extrapolated on my side,
yeah.
you know, the way it was defined. So.
Well, and, you know, there's an effect, just a magical concept, and it is scientific. Every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. This is a proven, if you are scientifically inclined, scientific concept. So you go and you murder someone, and someone comes in to reciprocate and beats the crap out of you, and then you retaliate, right? So this is the going down this downward spiral of retaliation. But for everything you do, and just think about the mind-boggling magnitude of this for a freaking second. Everything mm-hmm. you do has a reaction. Everything. The words that I'm saying right now, excuse me, coughing, the chair that I'm sitting in, the computer that I'm using, the fingers, the typing and how I'm moving my fingers, everything I'm doing, no matter how minute, is going to have a reaction. And we can't possibly know, I mean, we might be able to, but we can't possibly know what the reaction is going to be. And so there are these other laws that sort of feed into that cause and effect law, like the law of attraction. The type of energy that you put out into the world is this threefold law, is what's going to come back to you. What you call into yourself is what's going to come. Your thoughts become your words, which become your deeds, which become your actions. These concepts are all around that cause and effect concept, and that is a scientific concept. This is magic. You know, if you know what you're thinking and you are able to adjust your thoughts in a more positive way, just to kind of be a white lighter for a second, if you can adjust your thoughts to be more positive, that will begin to adjust your words to be more positive. That will begin to adjust your actions to be more positive, which will in turn bring more positivity to you. There's also that law. I think it's a law of similarity. Maybe that's not the right law. I can't remember what it's called, but it's like you never see a blue car ever. And then you buy a blue car and all of a sudden every other car around you is a blue car. You know, it's like, these are things that happen. These are things that happen and they're magical concepts.
Yeah. And they are translated into the things that you do in magical practices and, you know, to do that. And I, you know, it's funny because you were talking about that and you were going through the process and it's like one of the things that I notated was that under will, you have the individual will that goes to the divine will, and what you have is aligning your individual will with the divine will, and it then depends on the perspective of the practitioner whether you're going to do left or right-hand path magic. So it the same thing. I mean, it and if you're doing work for someone, it isn't just what that person wants because you're putting your energy into it and creating through you as a vessel. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons that practitioners, people that are practitioners of magic need to, you know, it's serious. It's, you know, it's not like a little lark. And I think that we all get in it because we want something. We all do. And then we start getting it. And, you know, the old saying, be careful for what you wish for when
absolutely.
It comes to you, you won't want it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting how many clients want certain things. And when they, you know, if they actually go through the process and it comes to them, that a lot of them will say later on, I really didn't want what I got, you know, that kind of thing. So, and most of it is, you know, the ego-based process of wanting something, is, you know, that, you know, I look at it as going, well, okay, you know, we all learn from our mistakes. Just, you know, that's part of the process.
Right.
And
there are some magical principles that, especially when I was studying with this Druid organization, they were considered laws. They were arcane laws, and at least in this one Druid group. And the one that I always remember, because I have them here if anyone's super curious, there's 10 of them. But the one that I remember the most and that I quote all the time is the law of polarity, that two things in opposition can both be true. And I feel like this is such an important magical concept, and it's an important spiritual concept. Because so often in our society, we believe that it can only be one way. And magic doesn't work that way. It can be many ways. It can look 100 different ways. And way number one and way number 50 and way number 17, neither of them is right or better than the other. And that is another part of magic, understanding there isn't just one way.
That's true. Well, and if there were... Look at the different belief systems and the different ways that people practice the magic from, you know, tradition to tradition. You get there, there are all different ways to get there. It's not the same. And, you know, one of the things that I remember Matthew Fox talked about in terms of that is there are many rivers, but, you know, one source. And you know, that's true in the magical practices of magic as much as in religion.
And that's where it does become for witches, for pagans, for folks who talking about magic isn't just practicing spell, but it's also being involved in the religion of witchcraft and the religion of being a pagan. This is it gets muddy, the lines are blurry, because practicing magic, connecting to divinity, worshiping the earth, this is magic. And so for folks who, you know, who are listening, where this isn't just about the folk magic of this, but the religious magic of this, there's a lot of bleed over between what might be considered religion and what might be considered spells or magic, you know?
Right, right, right. And you know, you have, you know, the old saying, as above, so below, as within, so without, you know, that has to do with all of what we're talking about in all the things that we're doing, and you know, the magical spells we do, the spiritual beliefs we hold, the religions or the deities that we follow or work with.
Right.
That's I guess why I get you know, the old saying, walk your talk. I have always,
yeah,
when I started working the path, I literally, that's what I kept hearing over and over again, and being who you are and being inside and out and all of that. So, and it's hard to hold that, you know, it's a very hard practice to hold. And so doing, you know, magic comes as well. I mean, you know, you really want something and you're going to go after it no matter what, and you're going to make it yours no matter what. And yet, if it's going to take someone else's free will away, the question is, you know, you have that point of reference. And I think nothing is devoid of ethics.
What you just said is one of the oldest concepts of my personal practice, and that's personal integrity, walking your talk. And you know, I so funny, I just wrote a blog post about creating your own pinnacle and finding the 5 points that are the most important points for you as a pagan, and creating a pinnacle that you can run through your body as a tool. And one of the points of my pinnacle is integrity. And it was something that I actually went to a very non-traditional high school for my last year of high school. And that was something that was ingrained into us, was about personal integrity. Are you in integrity right now? Are you doing this from a place of integrity? And I feel like that has to be your very first step in anything. Is this in alignment with really who you are? Is this walking your talk? And that is hard. It is hard. Yeah.
It is. And, you know, when somebody's out of balance, they are, you know, it's kind of a, this is maybe off, but not off of what we're talking about, is that if you are not in balance and you come into spiritual practice and magical practice and you start doing things from an out of balance standpoint, meaning you're very angry or you're, you know, very depressed or whatever, you're going to be putting that energy into the magical practice, the magical workings that you're doing, and it generates that kind of thing. So you are walking your talk, but unfortunately not in balance and not in necessarily, I mean, you could say integrity, because you're walking it according to your state of being, but not the higher value of integrity.
Right. Yeah.
So,
yeah. Tricky.
Yeah, I think.
Tricky, tricky.
Yeah, it does have that. So, you know, and then, of course, the one I love, the maxim, I love how they put this, the maxim of you know, the Hermetic tradition. So, of course, that's special, is, you know, the one I think way back when we had, I think maybe our first or second show, something happened, and it was like to know, to will, to dare, and to keep silent.
To keep
sometimes
silent.
That keeping silent is the hardest part, because we want to say things, we want to do things, and in the old tradition that I learned, you know, you don't talk about your magical working because you dispel the energy.
Right.
So,
right, it's a set it and forget it. Right, you do the work, you create the spell, you do the magic, and then you move on, and you just have faith and trust that is hard.
It is. That is a very hard practice to follow. It is a very hard thing to do as people who are involved in this, and then when you get people who are coming to you for help, and you have to, you know, it's kind of like, let it go, release, get on, and it's like, no, I need to do more. I've got to,
yeah.
You know, and you're like, no, you know, there is that, and you know, we're talking about magic. It has many, very many facets of what you do.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Absolutely.
But, truly, truly. So, do we have anything, any more words of wisdom we want to throw out there while we've got maybe about 5 more minutes or 4 more minutes?
You know, there. I think this is one of those topics where we could talk forever and continue to expand and dig into some of these concepts around Druids and Masons and Rosicrucians and, you know, because there's occultists who have been writing about magic for hundreds of years. And so there's a lot of information out there, and it is often very heady.
Yeah.
It's a lot of it is written in arcane language, but there is a lot out there. So, you know, if this is, dear listener, this is something that you want to learn more about, you want to dig in more into this esoteric loveliness, there is an unending amount of stuff to read and people to study and information to dig up. So I encourage, at least if you're, you know, if you're an armchair pagan and you just want to know a little bit of this and you're a dabbler and this is cool, then maybe all you need is me and Elvira babbling about this for the last hour. But there's a ton of information out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we have Bonwit, you know, Isaac Bonwit, who you know, took the concepts of the magical aspects, the esoteric point of references. You have people like Francis King and Stephen Skinner, who also did high magic. These are people that did it on an esoteric, but did it also with external books, not necessarily, you know, initiatory, fraternal, you know, I hate saying fraternal because then that's only guy stuff, but, you know, the concepts of secret organizations that work together and that dynamic, as well as people that we've been talking about in different traditions. So it's there's a lot out there. You can find some of the older group of people, you know, theosophists.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, or you know the more modern ones, fairy tradition, things like that. So they're all part of this big thing, and then use magic and what it does, and it's kind of like a big topic, and it falls into places. So that seems to be all on a process. I mean, they have, you know, like ingredients is desire, form, and manifestation. You know, they've got little formulas. There's always like, you know, that's another one of those things that I love. Like formulas, that's so cool. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
I can this plus this plus this equals that.
Yeah, that's fun stuff. I guess very scientific.
Yeah, again, scientific, and they try to make it that, but you know, in the end, they're like we were talking about the left and the right hand path. And science and magic are the same coin, just different sides.
Right, exactly.
So,
yeah.
But there we are.
Yeah.
I mean, we're almost at the end of our time, but I think we've at least touched on a lot of things people can find, you know, any part of what we've said interesting. They can follow through on, you know, further internet exploration. And you know, but like we always say, be very conscious of the internet and what you're getting and how you're doing, you know, who you're researching it with.
Take it all with a grain of salt.
Large boulders of salt.
Yeah. So, and then next week we'll be on the air with a new episode about the Norse Germanic god Odin.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Which will be fun, and it'll be after Thanksgiving, so I think
it's
going to have another flavor, and then the magic goes on to the third week, which will be reclaiming the next week after that. So
we're continuing our exploration of different traditions of witchcraft, and this is one that I have known intimately for over 20 years.
Oh my God!
Yep,
that's a long time, girl.
Good times, I know. Weird. I'm old. All right, then.
All right. On that
on that note,
solemn note, she will honk her off and have a relaxing day for her old bones, right?
I'm going to go have a cocktail, and I'm going to watch some Project Runway. And
ooh,
that's about it.
You.
Yep.
Right,
that's
well,
my plan.
That's a good plan, and
yeah.
I'm going to hang out. Our silent audience of my friend Alma is over here, and we're going to bring the dogs back out since they've been really good and quiet and kind of
nice.
Hang out, and who knows what we're going to do. It'll be fun to just watch television or something.
Yeah, sounds good.
Sounds good on my end. Sounds good on your end, my dear. And everyone out there in Radio Land, have a wonderful evening and a great weekend. Safe.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine. If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.